restored computer synchronization.
Now entering the nexus of geekery and guy world. In 3, 2, 1, mark.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
This is the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. Presented by IJMBooks.com.
Hey, kids, welcome back for another exciting episode of the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast, presented by IJMBooks.com. I am your host, Ian J. Malone. As always, joined by my buddies, Dave Daniels, Scott Esther. Going to get to them in just a second. But before we do, you know, the usual laundry list of stuff. If you want to find us, you can do so via the World Wide Web at dudesinhyperspace.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Hyper Dudes. And if you got questions for us, you can also reach out via email at dudesinhyperspace@gmail.com. Took a quick peek at the dude mail questions for tonight. We've got some fantastic stuff. Been a lot of good things in the news lately. So we got Star Wars Mandalorian 2 Season 2 questions. We've got questions about Justice League, the Snyder Cut, questions about the return of sports. It looks like we're starting to get some real traction there to get to. Also questions about the new Star Trek series, Strange New Worlds coming out. So lots of fun stuff to talk about. Also have a fantastic interview. Gentlemen, we love to welcome back to the show, and we're going to get to him in just a second. But before we do that, let me go and welcome in my usual guys, Brother Dave and Brother Scott. How are we doing this evening?
My friend, I am sitting here with a maker's mark, the dog at my feet, and I'm talking to some wonderful people, so I'm having a wonderful evening.
If people ever really wanted to know about our fondness for alcohol, they don't really have to read between too many lines to get that on this show, seeing as how pretty much everybody has got something in a glass when we tip the green flag on these things. Scott, how you doing, man?
I, too, am... I just don't have the dog. I've got... Evan Williams in a glass.
Nice.
And sitting back for a nice little conversation here.
Nice. I was ecstatic this week when I walked into a store and found out that the shop down the road from me is finally carrying Redneck Riviera, which is John Rich's stuff. And I kid you not, man, my sister brought me a bottle of that a while back just as a funsies thing because he was passing through Tallahassee and she met him. And so she got him to autograph a bottle for me and whatnot and sent it my way. And I tried it just thinking, okay, well, you know, for the money, that's a pretty affordable price. I'm sure it'll be, you know, very decent. And it's absolutely sublime. So if you guys get a chance, man, I have no problems supporting that brand. They do a great job.
Any time that you can talk about alcohol and it doesn't involve, I don't know, crap beer, I'm a happy man.
I also have some Coors Light in the fridge. I'm just putting that out there.
And there it is.
Well, you know what? Speaking of said items, one person who has no problems drinking an ice-cold Miller Lite with me would be our guest this evening. That may possibly be the greatest segue I have ever given on this show. That is professionalism right there. Best-selling author, mega publisher, superstar, my friend and yours, Mr. Chris Kennedy. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. I'm at least one of those things, but I'll let you figure out which one I am.
Well, hey, man, we're just privileged to have you on, as always. Before we jump into books and sci-fi and all of the stuff that we normally talk about with you, man, how are things? How's the family? How's everybody been doing? You've been quarantined just like the rest of us. So how goes life in the Kennedy household?
Well, I would say you quarantine sick people, and I'm not sick, so I'd say it's more like house arrest.
There you go.
But aside from that, we're doing good, and we're staying safe and healthy, so all good.
Congrats on the RV. Saw on social media where you guys are going to be really taking your act on the road once we're all able to get back out on the convention circuit and whatnot. You guys are going to be doing it in style, man.
We are. We're looking forward to it. We wanted to get out and see a little bit more of the country, you know, while we were still young enough to do so and, you know, able to, and the kids are all out of the house now, so we can go do that and run around and see the things that we wanted to see and do the things that we wanted to do. And, you know, I'm blessed enough, you know, with a publishing and author business that, you know, I can do that pretty much anywhere as long as there's some sort of connectivity, I can do what I need to do.
Cool deal, man.
And it's a tax write-off.
Right.
And it's a tax write-off.
And it's a tax write-off.
I mean, come on.
And I'll probably be going places that, you know, I need to for the book industry. So
of course,
that's a tax write-off too. So
hey, well,
anytime you got to write off a trip, Chris, just give us a call, talk some books, wherever you're at. We can always work something out and help you out on that end of it.
Well, cool, man. Looking forward to it.
Let's take accounting advice from the two guys who are drinking bourbon while we talk about this.
That's right. All right. All right, you primitive screwheads.
Can I
listen
write that
up.
Off?
There you go.
I wouldn't want to talk to – I wouldn't want advice from people that don't drink, so, you know.
Yeah, in this business some days, you really know it. So, all right, speaking of book-related things, it pleases me very much to say that books have very much been on my radar lately, and I'm very grateful that I get to, all jokes aside, say that I am doing that this time around in partnership with Brother Kennedy. The Makeoverse is back in the news. For those who haven't been keeping score at home, I signed over the rights to the Mako Saga, that would be Mako, Red Sky Dawning, and At Circle's End, to the Theogony Books imprint of Chris Kennedy Publishing some months ago. And our plan was this. We wanted to start in May with re-releasing the original trilogy, then move through June and July, and all hitting with a crescendo in August with the release of a brand new Mako book that nobody has seen before. So that was the theory, that was the plan, that was the strategy. And it all kicked off this past
and
Friday.
And it has come to fruition.
It finally has. So, well, I want to ask you this, man, and I want to lead with this. We had a long discussion in our last interview with you where we talked about what it is to be a CKP book, all right? What is it that you look for in stories? You get hit with a lot of mail, all right? You are for those. We talked about RVs, guys, and Chris being on the road, but that's no joke. Chris is very much renowned in the industry for being very much a road warrior. He is always out at conventions. So he's met a lot of people, and a lot of authors approach him about books. So he definitely gets to choose, be choosy about what it is that he signs. So I want to start with this. What was it about the Mako series, just at face value as a story that you felt made it worthy to slide into your arsenal at Theogony Books?
I think mostly because it's a good story, and it's fun. It doesn't, what I look for more than anything else is story. I want, you know, stories that take me somewhere. You know, I'm not only the publisher, I'm a reader too. And in every story that I publish, I've read, and I like stories that take me places and get me into it and make me feel like I'm, you know, part of the story and make me want to be there. And, you know, all of those things that bring out the joy of life kind of thing. You know, I'm not into stories where, you know, they're trying to moralize and, you know, you must do this thing and you must do that thing. Ah, screw that. I want a story that's fun, you know, and gets me into it and really is enjoyable. I want the suspension of real life. I don't read a book to experience what I'm, you know, experience a quarantine. You know, I want it to take me somewhere else and be fun.
Well, kind of on that same line of thinking, for those who don't quite understand how the publishing business works, a lot of times what you will have is one publishing company that kind of invests in a number of different genres. And the way they kind of break down their portfolio is through imprints. So you, in Chris's case, you have the Seventh Seal Press imprint, which is almost exclusively military science fiction. You have
it's all Four Horsemen.
Right.
Seventh Seal is only the Four Horsemen.
Theogony Books, by contrast, does tend to be a bit more, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, does tend to be a bit more space opera, pew-pew, you know, very much more my bailiwick and what it is that I do. So talk to me about kind
of where... That is absolutely correct.
Where is it, I mean, how do you see Mako kind of fitting in with the rest of what's happening at Theogony Books? Because I would dare say, I mean, outside of the 4-H-U, Theogony Books is your hottest imprint right now. There's a lot going on there.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that it fits in very well because it's a great story told well.
There you go. Simple enough.
You know, and that's honestly what I'm looking for. And, you know, yes, there's action. Yes, there's great storytelling. There's humor. There's all of the things that make it fun. It's a great read. It's a fun read. You know, I've had people that have told me they sat down just to read a chapter or two, and then all of a sudden it's 4 a.m. and they've got to get up in 2 hours. You know, so that's the kind of thing that I'm looking for, and you know what makes books fun.
Sure.
So yeah,
I feel the exact same way when I put pen to paper to write a story. You know, first things first, I need to know who the characters are and why it is that they're there. And a lot of that always, to some degree, is figured out as you write the story. That's part of the journey and the joy of the writing process. But, I mean, when I start out, I do need to know, you know, who the people are, who the major players are, and why it is that they're doing what they're doing. But also, I'm that same way. I want to craft a story that I believe is going to take people on a fun ride. We have enough real world. Particularly now, more than
ever. Absolutely.
We have plenty of real world. Just turn on your cable news, you know, cable news network of your choice, and you can absorb all of that you want. When you sit down with one of my books, it is very much my hope that you're going to get away from that. So, you know, and for that reason, Theogony Books was numero uno on my hit list when I decided, okay, you know, if I'm not going to go at it alone with the Mako series, where would I go? And I mean, Theogony Books was right there. It was such a natural fit. It was really a treat to sign that over to you. So, well, the reviews have been coming in for Mako, the first one in the series. That is out again as of this past Friday. What are some of the things that you're hearing about it? I can go on all day long about what it is I love about this book, you know, why I love these characters the way that I do. That's been explained in interviews galore. But what is it that you're hearing as the publisher now that it's out in the wild? How are people taking to this little thing of mine?
They're really, really enjoying it. I mean, I pulled up a couple right now. It's like relatable characters, good plot, realistic reactions. Yes, this book has them. I highly recommend it, and I'm glad to know there are more to come. And that's typically the response for this book is, you know, hey, when's the next one going to be available?
Right.
Which is exactly what you want. You know, you want people to be so invested in the story that they want to know what happens next. And that's absolutely why I picked up this series, was because I had the same reaction when I read Mako and I wanted to know more, you know, and I do want to say that, you know, sometimes people get into a series and there's just one big long goosh, you know, across all of the books. And that's not the case with Mako. Mako tells a complete story, but leaves you wanting more in the universe. And that's really something that I like. I don't want to read the first book in a series and, you know, have to read the second one to find out, or the second and the third to find out what happens. You know, it's a complete story all on its own, but also is slotted nicely into a universe where, you know, the trilogy all works together.
Sure. Well, speaking of things to come, and I've been kind of waiting for you to come on board so I could do this. We are going to break a little bit of news this evening. So I've got a news effect around here somewhere. I could totally pull that up. Maybe I'll drop that in a post prod just to be a goober. But we've been teasing that we're going to drop these things off once a month, but I haven't given dates. So drum roll, please. Here we go. Red Sky Dawning. If you read Mako this weekend, and I certainly hope you did, and I especially hope you left a review, if you are curious as to when the next installment of the Mako saga is coming, it is coming on June the 26th. So Red Sky Dawning will arrive on a Kindle near you or a paperback shelf near you June the 26th. And then At Circle's End, the final book in the Mako saga, the original trilogy, will drop July 31st. We're still working on finalizing the dates for Detran City Vice. That is going to come in August, but we're going to hold off on that for a little while and just stick with the original trilogy. So if you did enjoy Mako and you're wondering when you're going to get the next installment, you don't have to wait long. It's coming out June 26th. And then again, book three will come out July the 31st. So I did want to ask you, you know, characters are very much at the heart of what this story is. And I say that as the guy who wrote it and as the guy who's pretty much read all of the reviews. And so I hear, you know, what everybody else has to say it who's read it. And it really warms my heart and it thrills me to say that the characters seem to be the common thread among all of the reviews. Even people who, you know, weren't terribly thrilled about the story for whatever reason still found a way to give it 3 or 4 stars because they just liked the characters and wanted to know what happened to them. So as a guy who has read the Mako books, and we'll keep it spoiler free and just stick with book one, who, sir, is your favorite of the five renegades?
And why is it Danny Tucker? Sorry, I had to throw that in there. Who's your favorite and why is it Danny Tucker? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Lee Summerston. Sorry, I can't go with Danny. I'm going to go with Lee. Even though, you know, I don't know if it's being a homer to go with the main character, but I'm going to anyway, because I can just see myself, you know, in his place. You know, there have been times where I've been, you know, kind of down and things weren't going well. And, you know, you kind of got to grab hold of that one thing and, you know, really focus on it and let it pull you through sometimes.
Sure. I will admit to being a little surprised by that answer. You being the diehard New York Yankees fan, I thought for sure Mac would be the one you'd roll with. So there is, I don't know that there is a more diehard New York Yankees fan in all of sci-fi than one Evelyn Mack McKenzie. So we'll take that to the very next level in the next book. You'll see that.
So well, I'm looking forward to that then.
I was heavily influenced by a huge New York Yankees fan when I was writing that story. So out of reverence for him, I made one of the heroes of the story, one who wears pinstripes. He was very pleased.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yep. So, well, I want to kind of step back into the wide lens here and get back to CKP and Theogony books. I can talk Mako stuff all day long. And for readers, people who are listening to this podcast, if you want to do that, then bring the noise, man. You can find me on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, at Ian J. Malone for either one, and I'll talk about it with you whatever you want. I got soundtracks, I got character bios, the whole enchilada. But stepping back into the world of CKP, Theogony Books, Blood Moon Press, Seven Seal Press, a lot of stuff going on from 4HU to the Salvage Universe. Again, This Fallen World is the sale book of the week right now on Amazon and Kindle. You can get that for 99 cents. Man, you're always hustling. And you even have the hashtag on Facebook that says Respect the Hustle that comes out with a lot of your posts. Yeah, what is going on right now? What should readers really be hyped and looking out for?
Well, certainly the Salvage title universe is something that is really picking up a lot of steam and something that I know you're part of. We've got the anthology Through the Gate coming out here in 3 weeks, on June 12th, that you've got a story in. Mm-hmm. That's going great. You know, I picked up that book, you know, I had Kevin Steverson, you know, message me and say, hey, I've got this book. And I was like, sure, you and 500 other, you know, people have a book. But we got to talking and he was doing everything right with it. And it was like, wow, you know, this is really cool. All right, I'll take a look. And I read it and I was like, wow, this is awesome. And I put it out and people really loved it. You know, he's gone through the first trilogy. They're now into the second series. You know, we said, hey, who'd like to write a story for an anthology? And, you know, had tons of response to that. So that series is doing great. And I know that each of the short stories that are in that anthology could easily spawn their own stories into that series. You know, obviously the Four Horsemen for anybody that's followed CKP at all, you know, that's always big. We typically put out a book, about every 3 weeks, in that universe because people want them that fast. Other thing that's new right now is, the Beyond Terra Press, which is, publishing books, novellas in Chuck Gannon's, Kane Riordan universe.
Oh, cool.
And there's going to be a total of six.
Yeah, I've been seeing that on social media, and I wasn't exactly sure what that was, but I knew Gannon was a part of it. That's sweet.
Yeah, he approached me. He said, hey, I've got this idea. You know, it's kind of Band of Brothers meets Kelly's Heroes, a lot of redemption kind of stories for people that were always kind of the, you know, the screw-ups and the screw-offs, and, you know, they all get hijacked and end up in a, you know, another place, and, you know, they're trying to hold out until they can get rescued. And I was like, I'm in. You know, his Kane Riordan universe is published through Bane and has done great. It's been, I think, four of the five books have been up for Book of the Year. You know, so it's gotten a lot of good critical acclaim. So to have even a small piece of that universe, has been a lot of fun. And I actually have the number six story out of the six, and I've already turned it in, and I can't wait for that to come out, because that is just, I think that it is my favorite story of any that I have ever written. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what people think about it.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I definitely have to go check that out. I'm particularly excited about the Salvage stuff. I'm reading Salvage Fleet right now. I'm bouncing between that and an urban fantasy novel. And it's just, God, it's such a fun universe, man. It gets really, really back to the heart of what we were talking about just a little while ago, which is, you know, yeah, you got to have the action. You got to have the elements that make sci-fi sci-fi. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, if you're not invested in the people, then it's all kind of a flat ride. And Salvage really has that in spades, from, you know, from the main character all the way down to the various, you know, alien species, the mystery behind the technology and the ship and the AI and all that. It's just, it's a really fun ride.
And it's good people doing good things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people that you can cheer for. And, you know, I saw a thing the other day, you know, the 10 typical elements of, you know, science fiction, and, you know, of good sci-fi. And I went down it, and, you know, Salvage title had every single one of them. I was like, yep.
Well, and you really hit on something there. And that is that sometimes it's just nice to root for the good guys. And I know we live in an age and in a culture when the anti-hero is a very popular thing. And listen, in the right story, that's a mega formula, man. I mean, you can write some really, really intriguing, deep, textured characters with the anti-hero archetype. But, you know, man, sometimes it's just nice to root for good people who just do good things for the right reasons. You know, that's the biggest compliment that you said you liked Lee Summerson. As the biggest compliment anybody ever paid to me about Lee Summerson was the fact that he's just a good dude. As, you know, one of my first readers who ever picked up Mako, I said, "What do you think? Who's your favorite character?" He was like, "Lee Summerson." Why? Because he's just a good dude. And there's, you know, there's more to him than that. But at the end of the day, that's what he is. He's just a good dude. And, you know, whether it's, you know, people from the Salvage universe, whether it's Harmon and the gang, whether it's freaking Steve Rogers and Captain America, sometimes it's just nice to root for good people who do good things. And there's nothing more, you know, to look at it than that.
And I think, you know, it particularly at this time, we need heroes. We need heroes that we can all gather around. You know, the country has been, you know, so divided here in the last couple of years that I really like characters and heroes that try and be inclusive and bring people together and do good things for the common good. You know, we kind of lost that somewhere along the way, and it's something that means a lot to me.
Yep. No, I wholly agree, man. Well, I did want to ask you before I kind of let you go here, because I know you're busy, man. You got lots of other stuff, crap and all, man. You're putting out a book a week. Like, you're busier than a one-legged man in a butt kicking contest. But we touched on baseball earlier, and I didn't want to let you get out of here without kind of going there. Been a lot of buzz about baseball, been a lot of buzz about sports in general. The fact that we've had a lot of scuttlebutt lately that sports may be on the way back. It's just a matter of what that's going to look like in the form of Major League Baseball, which I know is a favorite of yours and of ours too. Looking like we are going to be, you know, staring down something akin to an 80-game schedule if they can get it approved, with early spring training through June, starting the season sometime around July 4th. You know, there's a lot of talk about what that's going to look like, whether they're going to realign the divisions for 1 year, just to essentially be a, you know, a north, south, and east, and west, or a north, south, and a central, and that be that, so that they can keep everything regionally packed, so you don't have guys traveling from California to Florida to Texas to, you know, Washington to wherever. But also something as wild as the universal designated hitter. That is going to be something that's going to strike up tons of debate among baseball purists. So you are a baseball purist. You're a New York Yankees fan. Commissioner Kennedy, you got any thoughts on what you would do to bring baseball back, and especially with the universal DH? Are you a fan or not? Because you are an AL guy, being a Yank.
Oh, you know, purists are going to say you should never have a designated hitter. You know, the pitcher should always hit. I've been an AL fan all my life, so, you know, I can I can live with the designated hitter. I could probably go either way. I think it's going to be good in that it's a level playing ground.
Sure.
You know, and that's the one thing I've never liked is, you know, that the National League has different rules than the American League. I would rather have them be the same, even if that meant no DH, just so that everybody's playing the same game. But, you know, I certainly, okay, everyone's going to use the designated hitter. I'm okay with that. Mm. You know, I'd like to see everybody playing by the same rules. You know, I realize that certainly at the start, the National League teams may not be built for that, you know, because they were built for, you know, the way that they thought the rules were going to be before the world changed on them. But, you know, hey, I was going to get a different kind of camper and the world changed on me. What did I do? I adapted, I adjusted, you know, and I'm going to make it work with what I've got. So they're going to have to do the same. And I guarantee you over the course of 80 games, the cream's going to rise to the top regardless. You know, so I'm happy with 80 games if that's what they get. You know, it's basically after the All-Star game, every game's important. You know, people are going for the pennant right from the start. Good on them. Play with the same rules. Let's go. When can I go to the ballpark?
Yeah, amen to that. All righty, fellas. Well, before we sign things off with Chris Kennedy, I got to throw my partners in crime a bone here. You guys got any parting shots, parting questions for the man before we let him slide?
Just hurts my feelings that Danny Tucker's not his favorite. really is one of those things, sir. I really thought better of you until now.
Oh, well.
Scott?
I wholeheartedly agree on the baseball aspect. Let's just play the games. You know, whatever comes of baseball this summer, there's going to be some sort of asterisk, some sort of, you know, denotation next to it that this was the year that they didn't do it for, you know, for the pandemic reasons. So this is your opportunity to see what changes you can make to the game that might be beneficial for all the fans and to get some more people involved in wanting to watch the game. So,
yeah, I think that's a great perspective. You know, they were going to try the designated hitter, I think, by 2022 anyway. So this lets them get a look at it, like you said, in an asterisk season anyway. Yep. So
and the Astros have to hand out trash cans to everybody so that everyone's on a level playing field.
All righty, folks. And with that, we will let the man slide to go about his business. Brother Kennedy, where can folks find you, man? The web, social media, if they want to know more about your books, the books that your publishing company puts out, where should they go?
They can find me on the web at chriskennedypublishing.com. We've got, you know, everything on there from what's been published, what's coming up, you know, what's coming up in audio. I know something near and dear to your heart. So we keep track of all that on the website. You can also, if you search on Facebook for the Factory Floor, CKP Factory Floor, you can find us there. If you ever wanted to talk to an author, all the authors are there. And we'll interact with you and answer your questions. So, you know, come meet us on Facebook or come join us on the web. Love to have you.
Groovy, groovy. Brother Kennedy, pleasure as always, sir. Be well, and we'll see you on the flip side.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Enjoyed it.
You got mail.
Okay, fellas, took a quick peek in the dude mailbag, and we got some good stuff on tap, so let's dive right in. First question comes to us from Alan. Hey, fellas, I've been following all the Star Wars casting news on your Facebook page, and I've got to say, if I wasn't stoked for Mando Season 2 before, I sure as heck am now. Question, out of the big three casting announcements, those being Oliphant, Sackhoff, and Morrison, who are you most excited to see, and which of their characters do you think has the potential to most impact the show? Thanks for taking my dude mail. So unless you've been living under a rock lately, Timothy Oliphant of Justified, coming to The Mandalorian. Katie Sackhoff of The Clone Wars and Battlestar Galactica, coming to Mandalorian Season 2. And then, I can never pronounce his first name, Temuera Morrison, who played Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones, was modeled, all the clones are modeled after him. He is coming to Mando Season 2. Everybody suspects he's going to play Boba Fett. Some chatter that maybe he could be playing Rex. So, you know, you throw that in there with Ahsoka, which we've covered that ad nauseum with Rosario Dawson. These are three biggies. So, Dave, I'll start with you, man. Out of these big three that just came out in this last week or so, who are you most excited to see, and what are your expectations?
You know, well, I think most people are going to be most excited to see Ahsoka Tano because that's just one of those characters that has done so well.
Sure.
I'm really most excited to see Timothy Oliphant, and here's the reason why. Those of us that loved and watched Justified and saw what he did with Justified and that semi, that quasi-Western style Marvel
yes,
character.
Sir.
And with the fact that this is really set up as a Western style show, you know what Timothy can do. You know, with Ahsoka, you're kind of pinned in with a character that you've already seen, with that you're hoping they can kind of put their a little bit of spin on it, but they're going to basically stay within the parameters that you've already seen, a story that you know so much already. If they're able to bring him in and give him his own character and just let him just go with it, that's the one that I'm really most excited about.
Scott, what do you think? Who are you most excited to see?
I'm excited to see Bo-Katan.
Okay.
Katie Sackhoff and that character. You know, the last image we were left with was the Darksaber. And yep. I really got to see how that played out. How did we get there? What's the story behind that blade? Really interested to see how that comes across.
Sure.
So far, in my book, Mandalorian is batting well above 500. Since we just got done talking about baseball, Chris Kennedy used that analogy. But there hasn't been a whole lot of moves that they've made that I haven't been in favor of. And so,
sure.
You know, I think they're going to keep the streak alive.
Yep. Well, I don't want to step too far out on this because it's been a little while, so it's not exactly buzzworthy anymore. But can we please just take a second to take off our hats and doff the cap, as it were, to the job that Dave Filoni and the gang did for the final season of the Clone Wars? I mean, it was, dear sweet Moses, man. You want to talk about riveting stories. Unbelievable.
Yeah, we need to go ahead and give Filoni his own trilogy to put on the big screen. It's just, he's earned that at this point in time. I don't care what the story is. Let's just give him something he can put on the big screen with a huge budget and see what happens with it. That was a fantastic ending.
Yep.
Yeah, hand him the keys.
Yep, no doubt. Really does make you look down the road at that sequel trilogy and say, how did you guys really screw that up? But I digress. We are not relitigating that here today. Moving on to question two. This would come from Tyler. Let's see here. Star Trek Discovery isn't without its detractors, sometimes rightfully so, but I remain guardedly optimistic that the new show Strange New Worlds could be the series that old school Trekkies like myself have been waiting for. What do you guys know about the new show, and what are your expectations? I'll jump on this one. Man, I don't have a whole lot of expectations for it. Other than the star is a guy that I like a lot. You guys have heard me talk about a show on here before called Hell on Wheels. It was a fantastic show, ran for about 5 years on AMC. It's about the building of the Transcontinental Railroad after the Civil War. A guy named Anson Mount stars as a Confederate soldier who finds himself working on the railroad. And great, great, great show. He is now going to play Christopher Pike on the new Star Trek series, Strange New Worlds. As for what we can expect out of that, I mean, I don't know. I at the behest of one of my dearest friends who's a diehard Trek fan, I have gone back and watched the first season of Discovery because I know it sets up this character. Star Trek Discovery for me is still every bit as forgettable as it was when I watched the pilot. This is just not my Star Trek. I don't find any of the characters terribly interesting, with the exception of Tilly, who I do think is a real... she's the best thing about that show, honestly. Beyond her, I mean, there's just really nothing. I didn't like the story that they told in season one. I didn't like the look of it. I still don't understand how it is we've got all this wooshy holographic technology in a time that's supposed to be set before Kirk. You know, I get it that filmmaking technology changes and you've got to evolve, so there's got to be some bit of a suspension of disbelief, but dear sweet crap, man. I mean, what are we doing here? Looks like the Matrix out there. So Discovery, not my show. That said, I'm two episodes into season two when you meet Christopher Pike for the first time, and I definitely get why fans are really clamoring to see more of this guy as the captain of the Enterprise. So I'll wait and see. I don't really have a whole lot of expectations, though, just because the people running Discovery are the ones who are going to be running Strange New Worlds. So we'll see. But, you know, they did me right with Picard, so I'm happy about that. Discovery, still not for me, so we'll see on Strange New Worlds. Either of you guys Trek fans, do you want to wade into these waters, or am I flying solo here? Which is fine.
You know, the interesting thing about this for me, one, you've got Rebecca Romijn Stamos, which, I mean, okay, I'm good with that. But the three writers and producers, so one of them had something to do with Chuck. One of them had something to do with Supernatural. Here's hoping it's the beginning of Supernatural and not the end. And then the other one had to do with American Horror Story. So, again, it depends on which seasons you're talking about going through, but that, a lot of those had some decent storytelling involved with it. So I'm okay with it. It's worth at least a pass to look at and see what happens, and you just never know.
Scott, Trek, you on board, or are you going to fly exclusively with the Wars?
I will say that the last 2 minutes of coverage on this is more time spent on this than a lifetime for me. So this is just something that never hit my radar.
All right. Well, with that, we will move on then to our next Dude Mail question, which comes from Randy. Yo, dudes, I give NASCAR a ton of credit for having a plan to return their sport to live action amid the pandemic, but I've got to admit, it still looks like cars driving in circles. What advice would you give a newbie trying to get into stock car racing? Well, it goes without saying that I have thoughts on that, but I'll let you guys weigh in first. Anybody want to tackle that?
I think NASCAR's done a fantastic job putting their product on the screen for people to consume, especially at a time when they were the only show in town. I thought that they came out of the gate pretty strong with both their iSeries offering and their eSports offering that they were doing, as well as, four events over the last 11 days. It's pretty incredible to pull off from just a sheer logistics standpoint, and I thought they did it pretty well. That, I know it's not really getting into the answer to the question of, like, how do you get into the racing part of it, but just from a sheer, like, logistics and production and marketing and the whole thing, they made racing interesting for new people to get involved. And I think they're going to come out of this with some fans, or at least some more casual watchers that will pay attention to what's going on in NASCAR.
Dave?
Okay, so to the answer to the question, it is cars driving in a circle. That doesn't make it a bad thing. There is a lot of strategy involved with it. And quite honestly, the events look very much like any other event they put on, because you don't really see the fans as much. You usually get just gratuity shots. They're not usually in the background. Every now and again, you get them coming through. So NASCAR is able to run their events fairly close, at least television-wise, to what they normally look like. Once you sit down and realize what goes into what they have to do, when they're going to pit, whether they take two tires versus four, what they have to do to kind of put things together. And if you spend the time to be a fan, you get a little better understanding, a little better appreciation of what they do.
Sure. Well, to Scott's point about the logistical end of what they've been able to do, I'll take that one step further and just say, you know what, honestly, there are state and possibly even the federal government could take a cue from NASCAR about how they assembled this plan. They looked at the situation as it is, which is you have a massive health crisis going on. They also looked at the very real factor of knowing that thousands and thousands and thousands of people are going to lose their livelihood if you don't start your races back. Okay. And that's not just teams and engineers and drivers and, you know, so on and so forth. That's all of your logistical staff at the racetrack. That's the people who run the popcorn stands and the vendor stands. That's also tons of businesses who are outside these places that expect fan traffic. And granted, you know, you're not going to have fans in the seats, but there are still people around, and it does give a buzz back to the area so that now people can go into restaurants. Maybe you get yourself some hot wings for the race on Sunday, just like my wife and I did this past weekend. Balancing health and getting a full understanding of that dynamic by speaking with experts, researching, talking to the CDC, talking to your state health departments, knowing that, you know, getting as best you can, wrapping your arms around the medical end of it, and then trying to balance that versus the economic side of the equation. I give NASCAR all the credit in the world for being able to walk that tightrope, because there's a whole lot of people who are trying to do that, haven't been able to pull it off so far. And I think they've done a great job. Real credit to their president, Steve Phelps, freaking brilliant guy. On how to get into the sport, you know, Dave's exactly right when he says it is cars driving in circles, but you know what? Baseball is just a bunch of guys hitting a ball with a stick. you have to get into the sport and really understand how it is that that sport operates. What are the rules? What are the mechanics? How, you know, what is the strategy? And there's a whole world there to explore. NASCAR is no different than any other sport. All of that exists. Even if you're not a car person, I mean, for crap's sake, I'm legally blind. I can't drive a car. I am not a car guy. But I dang sure love getting together with my wife on a Sunday afternoon and putting some burgers on a grill and watching a race. So understand strategy. That's definitely one. I think the broadcasters for Fox and NBC Sports do a great job of kind of breaking that down for the lay people like us. The other thing I would say is pick yourself a driver. And the way you do that is you go on social media nowadays and you see who's on Instagram or who's on Twitter. Those are typically the two places where you're going to go. And you get to know the drivers and who they are. If you're a diehard gamer, then Bubba Wallace is your guy. That guy's on Twitch every night, driver of the 43 car. If you're a nerd, all right, like us, you want to talk about Star Wars and this, that, and the other. Well, Ryan Blaney, you know, throws Marvel and Star Wars themed parties every year for Halloween at his house. He has his mask that he wears at the track right now. His face mask covering for interviews is the Vader mask. Same thing with Corey LaJoy, wears a Bane mask from Batman Dark Knight. There are people out there who are putting their personalities front and center to try and connect with fans via social media. So go out and get to know them. And you will find pretty quickly that there are people out there with real stories to tell that are very much worth getting to know. And then through that, you start rooting for them on the track. So if you ever do get a chance to go to a race, though, it will change everything. The spectacle of what a NASCAR race is, particularly a place like Daytona, is unbelievable. So, okay, that is the NASCAR question. Always love it when we get those. Selfishly, big fan of those. Next question comes from Martin. I know you guys weighed in a while back on Justice League, the Snyder Cut, but now it's official. It's coming to HBO Max. Will that be enough to get your subscription dollar? I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I did want to weigh in on it because it was a big thing on Twitter a few days ago. Justice League Snyder Cut, it's legit. It's coming. 3-hour cut of a movie that the studio totally bailed on, but it's totally turned into this unicorn of a thing that everybody wants to see. Question is, do we? Scott and Dave, Justice League Snyder Cut, are you going to get HBO Max to watch it?
You can't mess that movie up any worse than it already is, and it's a Superman story along with Batman and the whole Justice League. If it's a free preview of the HBO Max, I'll watch it.
Yeah. Scott?
Yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to take a look at it, but if it comes across, you know, would love to see it. None of the DC stuff to date has really floated my boat a whole lot. So, you know, again, I'm not really getting out of my way to go see this.
Yeah, I'm right there with Dave. I'm not going to buy HBO Max to see this, although I am curious enough that if you'll give me a 30-day free trial of the service, then I'll grab that and I'll check it out. I maintain that had Joss Whedon been given the keys to that film from minute one, he'd have given you a good Justice League story because he knows characters and he definitely knows those characters. He was very well known around DC at a time before, I want to say, he even got involved with Avengers. So Joss Whedon is a guy that can tell great stories. And I blame the train wreck that was on Justice League on the studio more than I do the directors. So, okay, final question comes to us from Kelly. Hey, dudes, it seems there's been a lot of scuttlebutt lately about, legitimate scuttlebutt, about sports possibly coming back. And I know we've touched a lot on this lately, so you had to know we were going to get this question in full. Seems like this could be happening by summer's end, but I don't want to get my hopes up. Of all the major leagues that could be returning, which do you believe have the best possible chance to make it, and which are you most excited to see return? Scott, I'll let you lead off with this one, man. It does seem that of late, as states are beginning to reopen, and Florida's been right at the forefront of this one, seems like there is a lot of very legitimate chatter now that sports could be on the way back, particularly at the professional level. What are your thoughts? You're somewhat plugged in on the industry on a lot of levels. So what are your thoughts and what are you hearing on this?
Well, from the baseball side, I think there's a lot of, they just got to work out the money issue. So that I do think that that's going to happen. They still have time to get through a majority of their league. To like we touched on earlier in Chris's interview, to test some things out. This could be a year where, universal DH. What if you change the rules on how extra innings are played, where you start a runner at second base? You know, some of those things that they've tried at the minor league level. You know, maybe you push it to the major league level this year just to see how it's going to go. Like I mentioned before, the season's going to get an asterisk next to it anyway due to the pandemic. The NHL today announced their plans for going forward with the playoff. They ended their regular season. They are pushing forward with 12 teams from each Western, from the Western and Eastern Division to go for a postseason, and they're going to move on. They've just got to work out the logistics of which cities they're going to do it in and those types of things, but they have a plan in place and they are going forward. I'm excited about playoff hockey. Same with the NBA. I think the NBA will follow shortly with a similar model that what the NHL is doing. Both are arena-based sports, and so they could probably pull that off. Both of them have similar playoff structures, so they could, you know, the NBA could piggyback off what the NHL is doing and do something similar. You know, I think most people are going to take a look at what happens this fall between professional football, which hasn't had a reason to make any major adjustments to their schedule or timing, as well as college football, which has already had some waverings on who can do what and when. You're seeing different college folks making calls on when students return. If there's no students, do they play sports? Do they play sports without students? So there's a number of factors that they've got to work out. But that's kind of the state of what it is. You know, in other countries, soccer is back. I don't know if I know you guys haven't watched the German league.
the what? So that's the round ball, even, right? The checkers on it and stuff. Okay.
It's the Bundesliga. I'm interested to get your take on this.
Gesundheit.
Yes, thank you. I've watched some of that, and at the beginning of their broadcast, they weren't piping in any crowd noise.
Right.
But this past weekend, they did. So I'm just kind of interested to get your take on that. I know the sports is going to be back in some way, shape, or form, but how do you guys want to watch it? What innovations from a broadcasting standpoint do you want to see, knowing that there's not going to be fans in the stands?
Don't give me fake noise. I don't need fake noise. It's like a laugh track on a sitcom. Once you know it's there, you just kind of roll your eyes whenever you hear it. So I don't need that. Dave, faux applause. What's your stance on that?
Yeah, I mean, it just makes you feel better at that point in time. You don't need it. Just people understand what's going on. It may seem a little odd, but let's just go ahead and do it. Let's just get something to watch. I do have a question though that kind of sitting here thinking about some stuff. Where has the Professional Bowlers Association been through all of this? You really don't need an audience. You right. can put people more than 6 feet apart. You can have cameras that can be set up. It's the minimal part of it. The bowlers have missed out on a prime opportunity to really get people involved in their sport and make something happen here. You could have set up decades of fans that had nothing else going on that, hey, we're rolling strikes here, boys. This is how this goes. We don't need anybody else around us. Where have the bowlers been through all of this?
Visions of Woody Harrelson and Bill Murray, the little kingpin action. Now,
bowlers and cornholers.
That's not just the bourbon talking, folks. That's quality wit right there. You're not going to get that on just any podcast.
I wrote that down earlier today, and I have been waiting to use it. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome.
That could be on a shirt.
You set them up, point. I'll knock them down.
And there's my bowling again. Where are they?
I think you are, to some degree, kind of dealing with apples and oranges here with pro sports and college sports. I think the pros, listen, it's a done deal. It's all about the money. And on that, I would say baseball, don't screw this. Don't screw this up. All right. Now, it's one thing to negotiate over health concerns. Mm-hmm. All day long, you have that conversation. All right. How do we do this as safely as we can possibly make it? Absolutely. That is a conversation that should be had to its nth degree. I don't need to hear about how they're squabbling over money again. We did that with the lockout back in the early 90s. For those of us who remember it, it left a sour taste in a whole lot of people's mouths such that legions of fans walked away from the game, and it took McGuire v. Sosa in the late 90s to get them back. And even then, a lot of them didn't come back. I mean, when you talk about sports that are really kind of starved for that next generation of fans, baseball is right there. So don't screw this up by, you know, squabbling over revenue. If you can come up with an honest thing to just get by through this year, you'll get back to your model for next year. That's one armchair, you know, armchair fan's opinion. That said, pro sports can happen. You can do it without fans. You can keep the camera off of the stands and just keep it on the action. It is odd, as we saw with pro wrestling at WrestleMania this year, and if you watch that on Monday nights, it is weird. But if you are just a fan of the game of baseball or the game of basketball, you at least get the competition, and that's what we're all there to see. So it's not perfect, but we all know what it is. We recognize what it is, and we can live with it as long as it can be played safely. And that needs to be determined by every team in every state in every league. First and foremost, safety first. But if you can do it, do it. College, that's a bit more of a pickle, man. Yeah. You know, I just don't see how you can justify putting kids on a field when you won't even let your own students onto campus. Those are unpaid employees. Pros, that's big boys. They collectively bargain that stuff. They make millions of dollars to do it. Mm-hmm. They can decide whether they want to get paid or whether they want to walk. And listen, nobody's going to blame an athlete, a baseball player, a football player, if they say, I don't want to do this. I don't feel comfortable doing this. I make enough money that I have myself a nice emergency fund. My family is going to eat if I don't play this year, but I don't feel comfortable. I want to wait it out a year and see where we're at with a vaccine or a cure or what have you. That's fine. And nobody should ever be penalized for that. Nobody should ever take any guff for that. But for those who want to do it, you can play. College, that's a whole different animal, particularly when you start talking about the geography, you know, and what's happening in, you know, I mean, seriously, if you're Florida State, are you really want to go to Idaho and play Boise State? You want to make that trip now? You know, let's say, God help you, if you had Washington State on the schedule this year, or, you know, UCLA, you got to go to Rutgers. Southern California, Rutgers, going to New Jersey.
Syracuse.
Yeah, Syracuse. You know, it will be interesting to see how college really realigns to be able to protect itself, protect its athletes, but yet fully recognizing that if you don't have a college football or a college basketball season this fall, there's a whole lot of athletic departments are going to go out of business. Whole lot of them.
So knowing that the sort of putting that, I totally agree that college sports is going to have an issue and a fight, you know, in a number of different ways. But knowing that the pros are going to return in some way, shape, or form, I put a lot of thought into, and after watching, you know, the match two with Tiger and Phil and Peyton and Tom Brady playing this weekend, the idea of miking up players with a lack of a crowd and getting sort of that inside look.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine, you know, just some of the commentary that you could pull off from some of the folks in the game who are media savvy enough to mic up during a live event like that without, you know, worrying about what they're going to say,
right?
You know, whether that's in a dugout on a baseball field or on the sidelines of a football field, you know, that's the kind of content that I think can come out of this that would keep people interested enough. And coming back to the games, I think it's just such a great opportunity for the fans to get an in-depth look at what actually goes on. That they never would have gotten before.
Sure. I think another thing that I'm looking forward to seeing, and we touched on this a second ago, I'm interested to see geographically how the different sports realign to try and minimize travel for the teams and for the athletes. You know, we talked about it with Chris in Major League Baseball. They're talking about streamlining the leagues so that there's really no AL or NL. It's just North, you know, East, West, and Central, or something like that, North, South, whatever. You know, that way you're keeping, you know, Cincinnati going to Cleveland a lot, or going to, you know, wherever. I mean, keeping all of them nice and central. You know, with college sports, that's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different box of rocks. You know, I mean, how does that look? Because right now, you know, we'll use the ACC as an example. How do you justify taking Miami and sending them to go play Pittsburgh or Syracuse? How do you justify taking Florida State and sending them to Boston to play Boston College? I mean, how is it that you justify making that? What are the adjustments to the schedule that are going to have to be made if you're going to, you know, if you're going to have a season, and what does that look like? Could it be that this is finally the year that we get Florida State versus UCF, or UCF versus Florida, or Miami versus USF, or FA, you know, well, we won't go there with FAU. it could be that out of necessity, this is the year that you start to get some of those matchups. Maybe you see Florida State go to Troy and play the Trojans. You know, I mean, stadium size does not matter. If you're not going to have fans, it's about being able to put guys out on the field and let them play in an isolated environment, and you would get that there. So, you know, will the television partners and the leagues and the universities be game to do that? Because, again, there are a whole lot of these, particularly the smaller programs. If you're USF and you don't have football, you're screwed. So you're going to take whatever they'll give you. As long as you can put it on television and sell it and get that ad revenue, you're going to make it happen. So, yeah,
and football in particular is going to be the last sport that they're going to cut. I mean, you're already starting to hear programs, other fall programs from colleges that are going to get cut. Scholarships are going away. It's a shame. Those kids have worked real hard to get to where they are, and to have something like this sort of derail their one financial tie to getting their education.
Yep.
If you're a tennis player, you're a soccer player, you're a swimmer that maybe got a scholarship, that's a shame that you now have to figure out what your financial situation looks like coming out of that. But football is going to be the last to get cut.
Yep.
The only saving grace in all of this is that because of that reason, because of the money generator that it is, they're probably going to spend a little bit more time trying to figure out how to make it happen.
Sure. Dave, what are your thoughts on how this could look for sports moving forward with regard to the fan experience? I mean, listen, when you start talking about revenues getting slashed, at some point you'd like to believe that that means tickets are going to be a little bit cheaper. Maybe you can get a hat for $15 now instead of $25. The whole experience stands to maybe come down a bit at the fan level. What are your hopes for that?
Well, my hopes are that the cost would come down. I think the opposite is going to be what happens, though, is you're going to see a new normal pop up where prices will actually be higher because people are trying to make some of that money back. And I think that understanding fans that come out are going to see a hat that was $20 before all this started become $25, and they're going to go, yeah, I get that. I get it. You know, it's one of those things that, and they're going to go ahead and buy it. And then when that becomes the new normal, I think you're going to see that them just continue to charge those prices because now it's what everyone's going to pay once you accept that's going to happen. Unfortunately, I think that the largest loser in all of this is going to end up being us. Those of us that want to go to a ballpark and watch a game, unfortunately, I think we're going to end up. You may see some teams and some sports decide to do something in the initial that will kind of do a different hey, let's give them something to bring them back in. Let's let them know that it's safe. Let's bring as many people as we can back in. But in the long run, I think we're going to end up paying for this lack of revenue one way or the other.
I think there's definitely a chance that could be the case. I think that's yet another one of those things that it's just going to depend on where you're at. Listen, if you're the New York Yankees, you're going to be able to charge full freight for tickets. That's just that. If you're the Oakland A's, not so much. Same thing in college football. If you're in Tuscaloosa or Greenville, then sure, absolutely. It's going to be business as usual. As soon as they can open those stands back up, people are going to pay. But if you're a fan of one of the, the smaller market teams, I don't know. So I'd like to believe it's all going to come out level in the wash somewhere. But all right, guys, well, we are coming down to the wire here. So let's go ahead and kick it with that little thing we like to call White Flag.
White Flag.
White Flag, as you know, is that last segment heading toward the final stretch of the race or the show, as it were, where we talk about what's on our radar. What are things that are coming up that we're excited to see, whether it's geek stuff, sports stuff, guy stuff, you name it. If we're excited about it and we're ready for it, then it comes up in White Flag. So, Dave, I'll give you a lead on that, man. What's on your radar coming up in the next few weeks?
You know what? I'm excited so far that things are starting to return back to normal here. We're like full phase one here in the state of Florida, starting to move towards phase two. I'm really looking forward, hopefully, to things getting back to normal. My little part of the world here, things moving in a better direction. Hopefully Memorial Day weekend did not set that back, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully being able to get back to a normal world.
Scott?
I'll echo Dave's sentiments there. Want to be able to get the, you know, I'm trying to wrap up school with the kids, get them into summer mode, and then figure out what we're doing for the fall. But, you know, mostly from a sports front, you know, the NHL announcement today was it just a breath of fresh air. Looking forward to seeing what they come up with and how that all comes together. Playoff hockey is so much fun, and I hope that it goes off without a hitch. Really would love for Major League Baseball to figure out what they're doing so that both Major League Baseball and the minor leagues can figure out, you know, how this factors into their seasons as we move forward. Would love to be able to catch at least one ball game this year in a live environment. You know, TV would be great. That'd be awesome. But, you know, nothing really replaces sitting in a ballpark on a summer evening, drinking a cold beer, having a hot dog, just relaxing and watching the game. So I'm really hoping that takes place. Not to mention that there's a number of folks that I'm still connected to that would benefit from a situation like that, and really would love to see them be able to get out of their current situations and back to something that looks normal.
Yep, no doubt. Well, I am can totally echo all of those sentiments. I was absolutely thrilled this past Friday night when my wife and I were actually able to go out to a restaurant and sit down at a table and eat. And I ate my hot wings fresh out of the fryer when they were brought to me, with French fries, celery, blue cheese, carrots, an ice cold draft beer in a frozen mug somebody poured out of a clean tap and brought to me. It was a glorious experience. Haven't been able to do that in going on, what, 2.5 months now? So really, really happy that we were able to do that. It was great. Place was pristinely clean. They had all of the tables socially distanced. You know, the waitress was wearing a mask, gloves, all the silverware was cordoned off in plastic containers, disposable menus. They did a great job. So it stinks that restaurants are having to resort to that kind of stuff, but them's the times. I'm just glad we're getting to a place where we can all get back to that sort of living. So good stuff there. As mentioned earlier in the show, I got numerous book stuff coming out here in the next month. So we've got the Salvage Universe Anthology Through the Gate drops June 12th with Kevin Steverson and all those folks. Really excited about that. The next book in the Mako Saga would be Red Sky Dawning. That's coming out June the 26th. So be ready to receive that. In other news, a couple of things that I'm watching right now. NASCAR obviously going to Bristol this weekend, so I'm jacked to see that. Thunder Valley is always a lot of fun. And then also got a new series that I'm watching on Amazon right now called Making of the Mob. You guys know I'm a total mark for like all of the History Channel specials, Men Who Built America and all of that. And this delves straight into the American Mafia, which is absolutely fantastic. And with that, we start to close this puppy down. Thank you, as always, to the listeners for listening to this fine radio program. If you have got thoughts, then please leave them on Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to me or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave those 5 stars and reviews to let people know that we are there. If you want to catch up with us, we're online at dudesinhyperspace.com. You can also find us on social media at the Hyper Dudes, and you can email the show dudesinhyperspace@gmail.com. For Brother Daniels, for Brother Esther, I am Brother Malone. Thank you as always, and we will see you next time on the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. See ya.
Peace out, Girl Scout.
What the heck was that?